the choices you make with your lifestyle, your money, every single day, influence your future. It is time to fight to make it better. This podcast is dedicated to you, to sharing ideas that you can use to take ownership of your financial future. Most Americans have little or no net worth. By being purposeful with what we earn, I know we can change that, and we must change that. I want you to learn this game. I want you to be better educated about your money. I want you to live a better life. Welcome to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial Podcast. Let's go. Salutations, greetings, and hello. My name is Stephen Briggs. I am the owner of Briggs Financial. Welcome to Money is Personal, episode number 81. Employee healthcare trends. Now, I'm going to break this podcast up into two halves, essentially. First half, we're going to be talking about a couple of different types of savings and health reimbursement accounts. We're looking at the flexible spending account and the health reimbursement account, and that's your spend side of things. And then we're going to dig in a little bit into some trends that I'm seeing with respect to healthcare insurance options and things to think about when trying to select a plan, not just selecting a plan for next year, but also maybe some things to consider when working out your compensation with your employer. And so we'll talk more about that in just a couple of minutes. So to dive right in, last week we did a huge podcast devoted specifically to health savings accounts. And the reason why I spend more time on HSAs than the two other types of accounts, the health reimbursement account and the FSA, is because HSAs have a lot more options in terms of what you can do with those funds, how you can grow them over time, and what they have in terms of long-term implications for you with respect to savings and retirement and whatnot. Health reimbursement accounts and flexible spending accounts, while they can be good and they can defer certain medical expenses, do not have the same degree of flexibility and do not have the long-term implications that an HSA does. So that's why they don't get as much airtime or airspace, is that they're not as complicated, and two, they just don't have that much range when it comes to what they do for you. They essentially defer some taxes, and that's the extent of it. So real quick, talk about what a flexible spending account is, because the FSA is probably the second most common, next to the HSA. In a flexible spending account, unlike an HSA, your employer owns the account, not you. When you have an HSA, you own that account. That is yours. You leave work, it's still yours. An FSA, that's not true. The employer owns the account. And so in an FSA, both you and your employer, depending on what you agree to, can contribute into the FSA. And for 2020, the contribution limit was $2,750. And we'll see what they, what we look at in terms of a contribution limit for next year. I would imagine it's going to stay pretty consistent, and that's, but we'll see. There may be an adjustment there. With respect to what you can do with it, you're paying for medical expenses out of it. If you contribute, you're putting that money in pre-tax. So you're basically getting the benefit out of it is that you're not having to pay taxes on those expenses. But there is a big catch. And that big catch is that when the end of the year hits, your employer can opt for one of these two things to be true. They can't opt for both. Either the funds that are in the account, if you haven't spent through at the end of the year, some employers will select an option that lets you carry that balance over, but you have to use it by March 15th of the following year. The other option is that some have what's basically a rollover provision where you're allowed to keep $500 a year going from one year to the next to the next. But the big thing I want you to get in your head, not get worried about the bogged down on the rules, but get this idea in your head. If you don't use it, you lose it. If you don't use it, you lose it. That is how FSAs work. And you go, well, wait a minute. So you mean I can contribute to this thing, but if I don't spend that over the course of the year, what happens to my money? You're going to love this. Your employer gets to keep it. What? Yep, that's how an FSA works. Your employer gets to keep it. And some employers will use those monies to offset other costs, maybe lower healthcare costs for other employees, that sort of thing. This is less bad if the employer is funding the FSA. Although, again, that's still compensation that you're not receiving. But when you're the one funding the FSA, and you don't, and you end up losing that amount, that's you literally losing money out of your paycheck. You have literally put in and gotten nothing for it. So to that end, when it comes to an FSA, you need to be very careful about if you're, you know, when you contribute, keeping in mind that you need to be spending through that money. Now, if that's a motivation for you to make sure to get those eyeglasses, make sure to get dental work done, what have you, or if you know you have stuff coming up, great. Use it. Get the pre-tax benefit. Save some money. But if you're not sure, I want you to have a good hard think about this one. Because if you put the money in and you don't use it, and regardless which provision your employer has regarding rolling over or having a little more time for the next year, the bottom line is that if you don't use it, you lose it. And that's your money. So you got to be careful. A health reimbursement account is different in a couple of aspects. One, it's similar in that your employer owns the account, but only your employer can put money in. And so under an HRA, they're the ones getting a tax benefit. But at the end of the, but you can't put money, you can't put money into the HRA by yourself. Now, a question that often comes up is, can I have an HSA and an FSA at the same time? And the answer is no. You cannot have both of those. Those are incompatible. So if you have an FSA, you're gonna have, even if you leave and whatnot, you're gonna have to wait until the next year, forego an FSA. If you qualify, by the way, you still have to be under a high deductible healthcare plan to have an HSA. But you, if you choose that FSA option or what have you, you have to wait until. You're going to have to wait for the next benefit year in order to decide, hey, I don't want that FSA and I qualify for an HSA. I want an HSA. So if those are levers or options you have available, know that. The second thing I would also say is, okay, so then how about if I'm under a health reimbursement account, can I be under an HSA? And the answer is it depends. There are a few health reimbursement account plans that are compatible with a health savings account. And the IRS has certain rules, essentially, for this. And I'm going to outline them real quick. Number one, if your health reimbursement account is a limited purpose one, means it pays or reimburses only permitted coverage, permitted insurance, or preventative care. Expenses don't count towards the high deductible healthcare plan deductible. If your health reimbursement account is a post-deductible account that pays or reimburses only for preventative care incurred or medical expenses incurred after your minimum annual deductible is met. If your health reimbursement account covers expenses only after retirement, or if you've suspended your health reimbursement account, so if you've paused it in some way, shape, or form, those are the ways that you can have that be compatible with an HSA. And what I would say to this, if you're going, that's a lot of jargon, is that's fine. Talk to your HR about this. they should know this answer. It is their job. But they should know whether your HRA is compatible with an HSA. Typically speaking, if it is, they'll offer both and say that you can participate in both, at which point you're good to go. But you'll definitely want to check with that, because if you can have both a health reimbursement account being funded by your employer and contribute to a health savings account, you have tax-free employer-sponsored funds to pay for your qualified medical expenses. You're going to have, because you're under a high deductible healthcare plan, you're going to have lower insurance premiums. You're going to get triple tax benefits because you'll have pre-tax contributions, tax-free growth, you get interest or investment growth out of it, and those tax-free distributions at the HSA. Like, it's a big deal. And it can be a substantial financial windfall if you really knock this out of the park. So, bottom line is that it's really, really worth examining what your plan is, to be very careful about, especially if you're under a flexible spending account, if you're under an FSA, that you actually use those benefits so you don't lose those benefits come end of year. Now, having talked thoroughly about health savings accounts, health reimbursement accounts, and flexible spending accounts, I want to shift gears from it and talk about overall. So you're going to get your employee benefits, and you're going to be choosing an insurance plan for this next year. And I want to talk for a few minutes about some trends I've seen and am seeing in these plans, and how to think about how to break these down a little bit. So some trends that I'm seeing ultimately. I was very surprised last year, and this is I think more than any other year I've looked at insurance plans, how bad the high level plans are, or the high tier plans. If you're that gold plan, or even that silver plan, in many cases, they were just very suboptimal offerings in terms of what you're getting versus what you're paying for. That's not to say, everyone needs to do their own analysis on this and draw their own conclusions. But as I looked at that time and time and time again for my clients, and we're getting into the season where we're going to start doing that again, I was amazed just how not close it was when you started adding up. Because the thing is, what you really need to do in this is not only look at the cost, but look at how much in benefits am I actually going to receive. Thinking about, are there co-pays? Is there a deductible that has to be met? Is there some form of co-insurance? And these are kind of a big deal, because what starts happening is you really need to figure out, especially if you know your costs, mapping that stuff out and going, okay, it falls under insurance, but I'm going to have to pay, maybe it's 100% post-deductible, but it's a three, and I have a deductible of $1,500, and it's a $3,000, procedure or what have you. Well, then you're going to be paying $1,500 out of pocket because you have to reach your deductible before insurance kicks in. But where it gets really murky is when you have to hit your deductible and then it covers 80%. So in that $3,000 example, the first $1,500 of that $3,000 you're paying for, and then of the remaining $1,500, you're paying 20% of that too. So on a $3,000 procedure, the remaining $1,500, 20% of that's $300. So you're going to pay the first $1,500 plus another $300 for a total of $1,800 out of $3,000. You start mapping these things out a bit, and I think it's important to really do the math, because I think a lot of times people look at these plans and they want to gravitate toward what makes them feel good on paper, like when they look at it, without actually doing the math on, does this actually save me money? Which one of these plans is best for me? Which, because of how expensive the higher-end plans are getting, what we're seeing happen much more frequently are employers offering those plans, and maybe even offering those plans at a lower rate because they're subsidizing more of it, Or they're offering their employees the option of going with a high deductible healthcare plan and partially funding their health savings account. Now, I think this is tremendous. I think this makes a lot of sense. Where unless you need those extensive services, and if you need, and by the way, be real clear, I never dictate to my clients what they should do with respect to what is a healthcare decision for you. That is not our role. What you do with your body, what you do with how it's taken care of and cared for, not our role to tell you what to have done or not done. No. But it is to say, I want you to think about how you're paying for it. And finding the means of paying for it that's going to keep more money in your pocket if possible. And obviously there are other considerations too in all of this, especially when it comes to like what doctors you can see, that sort of thing. That can play into what coverage makes sense here. By the same token, be careful that I love to see this doctor because I've seen them for a long time. Many times people have this sort of unwillingness to look at in-network plans simply because they have found a doctor of choice without doing any homework on are there doctors in-network that are really good. In some cases there are. In some cases you would actually save quite a bit of money going to see that physician or at least giving them a try. So I would at least encourage consideration. You know, by the same token, if I'm being transparent and honest, like for example, there's a dentist that I work with that I absolutely love, and would I trade that dentist for the world? No. I when it comes to poking and prodding in my mouth, I need to trust the people that are doing all of that, and that's a high priority for me. So I get it. The other thing I would say, and going back to what I was saying on the employer front, if your employer is not contributing to your HSA, that could be a source of negotiation. I think people get very, when they look at a negotiation for with respect to salary and whatnot, they're good at for their job, they get very focused on the number by itself and say, well, I'm getting paid more. Go, okay, you're getting paid. But then what benefits are you getting? Or what benefits are you having to pay for? And how much are you having to pay for them? And what is the overall net on this? And so that's, it's challenging because there's a certain amount of pride in saying, I make X dollars. But we need to stop thinking of our compensation purely in terms of X dollars. And this is where, well, why have salaries stagnated? Because healthcare has gone up so much. Frankly, whenever I see a report or a survey talking about how salaries have stagnated in many aspects, there is also an aspect that healthcare has gone up a ton. Now that doesn't this is not an argument against you've got low wage workers that aren't getting healthcare benefits and they're not seeing an increase in pay, and that's bunk, to put it lightly, but. What I would say then is, there's a point of negotiation that gets missed a lot of times by people, and it's in the benefits package. And so checking to see, especially if your employer, like I said, doesn't offer any sort of contribution to your HSA, saying, you know what, if I'm taking this less expensive plan for you, you should be willing to contribute to my HSA. And a lot of employers do this. So this is a point of leverage and a point of contention. And it's something you can advocate with your HR as well and say, these other companies are all doing this. We should be doing this too. Why is this person who gets if a person gets a gold plan getting so much more in healthcare subsidy than I am, if we're doing the same job, same role, same everything, why wouldn't, if I'm costing you less by picking a lower option, why don't I get more benefit in terms of an HSA? Why am I not getting to save some money there? So, but that said, bottom line, do your homework on this. Really do the math. What services are we using? How much do they cost? And how would that amount be calculated So that, and take a look at those benefits, and then at that point you're then making an informed decision, but also make it, you know, use that as an opportunity to potentially negotiate with your existing employer to get a better, a more robust package. That's just going to save you money. On that note, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Money is Personal. You can catch all the other remaining 80 episodes of Money is Personal on the Briggs Financial website at BriggsWealth.com. You can also find us wherever your favorite podcast is, because we're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, Player FM, and iHeartRadio. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful week. Be safe, be well, and we'll catch you with a fresh episode next week. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial Podcast. Please follow Briggs Financial on Instagram and Facebook for more terrific personal financial stories and ideas. And check out our firm's website at www.briggswealth.com to schedule a free consultation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. This information is provided for informational and educational purposes only. Briggs Financial believes the information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but does not guarantee the accuracy of the information being provided. This information is not meant to be a complete summary or statement of all available data necessary for making financial or investment decisions and does not constitute a recommendation. Please note that the information provided may include references to concepts that have legal, accounting, and tax implications. It is not to be construed as legal, accounting, or tax advice, and is provided as general information to you to assist in understanding the issues discussed. This information is not meant as financial or investment advice pertaining to your personal situation. The selection of appropriate investment or planning options and/or strategies should be made on an individual basis after consultation with appropriate legal, tax, or financial advisors. Nothing contained herein is intended as a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any product or service mentioned, and they may not be suitable for all investors.